Welcome to Mormon Identity, a 30-minute talk radio program that addresses church topics important to members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Our host is Robert L. Millett, professor of religious education at Brigham Young University.
We welcome you once again to Mormon Identity. I'm Bob Millett. I'm joined today by my friend and dear colleague, Michael Otterson. Michael is the managing director of the Church Public Affairs Department. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
Mike, I want us to talk today, if we could, about public affairs. And frankly, let me just begin by asking the question, in your mind, why does what we could call, I guess, the image of the church, why does the image of the church matter to the leaders of the church? Why should it matter to us as members of the church?
I think it matters in a lot of different ways. Obviously, the reputation of the church matters mm-hmm. when a missionary knocks at a door or encounters someone in the street, because the response of that person is going to be, to some degree, conditioned on their perception. Yeah. It matters when we are dealing with government officials in discussing or negotiating visas for missionaries to enter a country. It matters when we're making application for a new chapel or building or a new temple. It matters to the neighbors in that locality. Mm-hmm. And in 100 other ways, the reputation of the church governs people's responses, or at least guides people's responses to the church. And so if the church is to be effective in its mission, in its work, then it needs to pay attention also to its reputation.
Well, I ask that because I know there are probably people who – I know there are people who say occasionally, why is the church so concerned with its image? But it seems to me, yeah, like you've suggested, that it's awfully hard to make progress in this world if everybody feels we are what we are not.
Right. Well, and it might be worth just taking a moment to talk about that word image.
Yeah, what do you mean by image?
Well, I never use the word image, at least not if I can avoid it, because the term image to me smacks of PR. It smacks of trying to somehow polish or gloss over issues. And I think I prefer to use the word reputation, because I think that doesn't carry the baggage that the word image carries. I think the most important thing that we in public affairs try to do is help people see the church as it really is, and not as we not like some picture we like to sort of conjure up to appeal to them. I think that's extremely important. The body of research in public relations practice emphasizes very strongly that you cannot change people's perceptions of an organization by simply sending out messages. You only change people's perceptions of an organization by that organization's behavior or actions, or by the actions of the people that represent it. And so in this case, if our members were to behave badly, or if our missionaries were to behave badly, then people don't – they cannot connect that with what you're trying to say mm-hmm. if you're trying to say this is a great mm-hmm. organization. So it's extremely important that we focus on what really matters, and that is on the way we act.
I was talking with a person the other day, in fact, who was a religious leader, and he made the comment, Michael. He said, I'm constantly barraged by people's unkind thoughts about the Mormons. He says, but I know too many Mormons so that I know better.
That's a very good point, because what we have found, again, in research – this is not guesswork – is that people tend to have a better perception of individual members of the church than they do about the church as an institution. Mm-hmm. That's not unusual. People may like their congressman, although maybe not right now, but right. people may like their congressman and not like the federal government.
Right.
People may not like their financial institutions, and they may be resentful of the profits of credit card companies, but they may like their bank teller.
Yes.
And so when people are exposed to individual contacts, they will generally be more favorable. And so when people have met our missionaries or they've interacted with members who are maybe their neighbors, they're likely to have a much better perception, and that is very significant.
It seems to me then that there's a sense, what you're describing then, there's a sense in which in some ways the greater burden for building the reputation of the church rests with individual members rather than an institutional organization like public affairs.
Exactly. And that is an enormously significant point, because if every member were to understand the collective power, the collective influence that their interactions with their neighbors, with the storekeepers in their mm-hmm. neighborhood, with everyone they deal with their kids' teachers, that all of those interactions need to be consistent with the gospel. That doesn't mean to say that they're always talking about the church and the gospel. Of course not. But it means that, you know, if they feel strongly about an issue or they have a disagreement with a neighbor, it means that they need to remember who they are. That is about the most powerful component of our collective reputation.
Right, rather sobering, too. Michael, we've been around as a church for a good 180 years now. Why do we still wrestle with negative perceptions at this point? Surely we would think people have figured us out by now. People would know what makes us tick. People would know what we really believe and what we really stand for. Why do you still think we have so many negative perceptions?
Well, it's interesting to look at the data. The research varies only slightly, depending on which research you're looking at. But whether it's the Pew study or a Gallup study, or whether it's research that we have done mm-hmm. Or commissioned, the broad picture is about the same. About half of people say they have absolutely no awareness of our beliefs or practices. That's about half.
Say that again.
About half of all people have no awareness of our beliefs or our practices. And we may find that that is surprising, but it isn't really.
It is to me. 50% don't know much about us.
If you find it surprising, ask yourself this question. Now, with your theological background, you may be able to answer this, but most people, if they're asked, how much can you tell me about the Anglican Church or the Jehovah's Witnesses?
Oh, I see what you mean. Mm-hmm.
It would be about 10 seconds before they'd run out of things to say.
Yeah.
And we assume that the vast public is going to have some in-depth
knowledge. They would
know
us better than they would know the Anglicans.
Exactly. Yes, assume that. There's no reason why they would. People will be familiar with their own religious beliefs or values, and they may well contrast favorably or unfavorably our beliefs with theirs, but they're not going to know very much about us at all.
Well, and I would presume that they might have had a positive impression based upon positive, happy experiences with neighbors, et cetera,
precisely,
or with working partners in business, et cetera, but not know much about what we are, what we stand for, what we believe.
Precisely. This gets right back to the point we made at the beginning, which is that the burden of responsibility actually rests with the individual member. Not to try to preach theological sermons, but to live the religion in such a way that people see their values. That is absolutely New Testament theology, that we live the gospel by being followers of Jesus Christ. And that is what public affairs really is all about. It's living our religion so people can see the example, and then the respect comes from that. It doesn't come from telling them about theological principles or even about our history. Those things will come later. Obviously, you get to a point where people may be interested in embracing the church mm-hmm. or becoming a mm-hmm. member. Then, of course, you have to get into the theology and the history and everything else. But on a surface level, it's really all about who we are and how we live and how they feel about us. You know, if you mentioned the word Salvation Army to me,
yes,
I would immediately have good feelings because
yes.
I would identify them with
you know
service
they do
and
good.
Outreach.
Mm-hmm.
They do good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about their theology, but I feel good about Salvation Army people. Well, why is that? It's because they live what they claim mm-hmm. to be.
We'll follow up on that a bit, Michael. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mormon Identity. I'm Bob Millett, and I'm joined by the Managing Director of the Church Public Affairs Department, Michael Otterson. Michael, we had just begun talking about the reputation of the church and how people feel about the church and how that's so often determined by their interactions with members. You began with some statistics. The first one, repeat that first one, if you will, Michael.
Well, I indicated that about half of all people have little or no awareness of our practices or beliefs, which means that you're really measuring a non-opinion in mm-hmm. many cases. Mm-hmm. People just don't know enough to be able to say anything. They may say, well,
they're nice
Salt
people.
Lake City,
yeah.
Salt Lake City, and maybe Brigham Young, and they might mention polygamy even, but mm-hmm. that's about it. Then they run out of things to say.
The second one.
Well, 47% of people, according to the latest survey we had, don't have a favorable view of Mormons. And in order to understand that, you have to look at a little bit more deeply at the statistics. In fact, if there's one characteristic of public opinion about the church, it's the fact that views are highly fragmented. So when you're looking at when you're looking at the stats, you'll see things like when people are asked to define what the church is, whether it's the first thing that comes to mind when they hear the word Mormon, they'll say things like secretive or polygamy, mm-hmm. or they may mention family values. Mm-hmm. They may say dedicated good people. They may say cult.
So they'll divide their perceptions up.
Well, it's not so much that. It's that they'll have their top-of-mind responses are so different. If you talk to 10 people, you'll get 7 different opinions.
Okay, all right.
So it's very, very fragmented. And, you know, when some people say very dedicated, other people will see that as fanatical. Mm-hmm. Some people say family values. Other people will think of the FLDS group when they hear that. So it's really across the board. But if there's one clear characteristic, is that there is no central theme. There is no top-of-mind phrase or word that comes to mind when people hear the word Mormon. That, I believe, is our biggest problem.
Isn't it interesting, as much emphasis as we place upon family, or as much emphasis as we've tried to place, especially in recent years, upon our devotion to dedication to Jesus Christ?
I mean, exactly.
It's indicating it's not getting across.
Exactly. And I think part of that is because our own messages can be very fragmented, mm-hmm. unless we really understand that what it really all comes down to is behavior. If I had a magic wand, what I would try to do is what I would hope that people would respond to when they hear the word Mormon is that they think, first of all, these are people whose beliefs, whose doctrines, whose practices are rooted in Christ. And secondly, right behind that would be the idea that these are people who live their religion. Mm-hmm. That's the starting point. Joseph Smith himself said that the doctrine of this church is the gospel, in effect, the New Testament gospel. And I could quote him for
sure.
You. But at the end of that comment where he talked about it being Christ-centered, he said that everything else was an appendage to that,
he said the doctrine
of Christ.
He essentially said the atonement is the central feature and everything else is an appendage.
Exactly.
The fundamental principle of our religion, he called it.
Exactly. So
the question is whether people know that.
They don't. They don't know that. And I believe that the way that they get to know that is by the way that members live, as well as the way the institution acts. And so you always want those two things to be in harmony. Interestingly, church leaders clearly embrace this idea. We did an analysis, I think it was the conference before last, and we actually looked at all of the references in General Conference, that is, all of the talks that were given in General Conference, and we tried to analyze, family, mm-hmm. references to family, references to spirit, and references to prayer, and all of those other things. By far the largest segment, the most common phrase used was Jesus Christ. 553 references to Jesus Christ in one weekend. The next highest was 322 references to the family. Mm-hmm. So you can see there that the church leaders themselves constantly talk about not only about Jesus Christ as the center of our devotion, but also about the importance of living as he taught.
Well, it seems like in that sense that the problem doesn't seem to be at the highest levels. The problem is getting this to the end of the row. It's getting the members of the church in their communities, in their conversations, in their social clubs, whatever, to let people know where we're coming from. What else do we find, Mike, statistic-wise?
Well, perhaps one of the most sobering of our recent studies was that came out of one of our recent studies was a reference to where we are, where we compare with other religious faiths. In fact, when compared with Catholics, various Protestants, with Jews and Muslims, we are the least respected faith, with the exception of Islam. Now think about that for a moment and just consider what that means. That is
well, and I would guess
really
that
remarkable.
The concern with Islam in many people's minds would be a suspicion or a worry in terms of the radical Islamic groups, etc.
Right. So you would assume that we'd be ahead of that. But the fact that when we don't do better, here's a Christian nation, people are more comfortable with the Jewish faith than they are with the Latter-day Saint faith. Mm-hmm. So it tells you we have a lot of work to do. Now, I don't want to come across as being all gloomy about this. This is a problem that that the church has faced for 180 years. And considering where the church came from and the enormous hostility of the last century, we have come a very, very long way. Even in the past couple of years, I think we've seen tremendous growth, improvement.
Well, what I would say this, isn't it true, I mean, it really is sort of true, that you tend to be down on what you're not up on? In other words, part of our problem is, again, information. If people don't know who we are and what we stand for, they are far more prone to think negatively than they are to think positively.
Well, I think that's true. I think it's also true that when the average member of the church realizes the impact that they can have by simply living their faith, mm-hmm. you know, this is a world where there is an absolute hunger for negative media. The internet has exacerbated that situation. Yeah. So you get one member of the church, whether it's in politics or business or whatever, who breaks faith with the basic tenets of our belief, and you see the media go all over it. We've seen that here in Utah. We've seen it in other places. We've heard a lot about so-called affinity scams, affinity fraud, mm-hmm. Where people take advantage of other members for financial purposes. Now, I'm not suggesting for a moment that that's any more prevalent in our community. It's probably less prevalent in our community, those kind of things, than elsewhere. But when it happens, you can be sure it's going to get attention. And so every member carries a responsibility to live their faith privately as well as publicly.
Several conferences ago, I recall Elder Holland speaking on missionary work and reminding us of President McKay's charge that every member be a missionary. And I remember Elder Holland saying, we would be thrilled if every member were a member. Michael, we've been talking about the church's reputation and how that may be improved. How do you go about creating a reputation?
Well, as I said earlier, a reputation is really created by the people who look at you rather than by the institution itself. It's the collective view of millions of people all consolidated into that single reputation. But we talked a little bit about how individual members can influence that. But let's talk a little bit about how the public affairs department,
the institution,
reaches out mm-hmm. in terms of the representing the institution. The core focus of the public affairs department is to build relationships with people who are influencers in society. And that might be the news media. Mm-hmm. It might be political leaders. It might be leaders of other faith groups. It might be academics, think tanks. In other words, people who tend to shape and guide public opinion. Given the limited resources and limited manpower that we have, clearly we want to focus on those people who are most likely to be able to magnify that message. And we have one key objective in going to have outreach or conversations with those individuals. It's to develop the idea of mutual trust, respect, and understanding. And so if I'm talking to a journalist in Washington, or one of my colleagues at work is talking to somebody in a senator's office or whatever mm-hmm. it might be, when they leave that appointment, they want to feel like the trust has been enhanced, that there is more respect for what the church is, and that there's more understanding. Notice we do not use the word agreement. We don't mm-hmm. expect people to agree with us.
Right.
We would much rather people disagree with us and understand us thoroughly than agree with something erroneous. So it's all about building that mutual relationship. Let me give you an example of that, if I may. A year or so ago, everyone saw this in the public, but the Reverend Al Sharpton made some comments about the church not being Christian.
Yes.
He was subsequently called on that, actually, interestingly, not by members of the church, but by others. We invited him to Salt Lake City to actually see the church close up. And I remember going into the visitor center on Temple Square, where that beautiful Christus statue is.
Yes.
And standing there with Elder M. Russell Ballard of the 12, and Elder Ballard simply saying words to this effect: whatever you may see, Al, in the next couple of days with our humanitarian work and with BYU and whatever else you may see, this is where it really begins and ends, right here, with our devotion to the Savior. And And you could see a change in him at that moment. Hmm. And I believe that that kind of personal interaction, that kind of willingness to expose ourselves to scrutiny is extremely helpful. And yes. We could have simply brushed that off, become very defensive. Instead of that, the brethren had the foresight to invite him to Salt Lake, and I think it's permanently changed his view.
Oh, that's marvelous. That's a great example. Continue. What other kinds of organizational things does public affairs seek to do to help the church?
Well, you'll remember during the 2008 political campaign of Mitt Romney, scrutiny and interest in the church became it just magnified out of all proportion. And we anticipated that that would probably happen, and so we spent quite a bit of time well in advance of Mitt Romney announcing his candidacy to meet with political journalists in Washington and to emphasize, first and foremost, the partisan political neutrality of the church. We wanted it to be clearly understood that the success or failure of the Mitt Romney campaign was nothing to do with the church, that we were completely independent of Governor Romney, and indeed, as we are completely independent of Harry Reid. You've got their two active Latter-day Saints on either end of the political spectrum.
Right.
Very important, we felt, that people should be inoculated against the idea that somehow these prominent members of the church represent the church. They simply represent themselves or their own constituencies. They don't represent the church. So that was one thing. We were quite busy doing that for quite a long time.
Right. Well, let's take that then. More broadly, Michael, what is the role of public affairs? Do you have representatives that attend to governmental, civic, political matters in particular as part of their assignment?
We do. In connection with the church, the Office of General Counsel, we work with legislators. We work on regulatory matters that might impact the church, whether mm-hmm. it's employment or land acquisitions or whatever it might be. So there's that element of it, which is really our government relations. And we also have outreach to government institutions around the world. They might be based on a visa issue, or they might be based on the right to import materials, curriculum materials,
right.
all kind of other things. So, and in those kind of things, we often interact with many other church departments as well.
Michael, you mentioned specifically Al Sharpton from New York City, who was brought back to Salt Lake, and the impact that visit had on his perception of the Latter-day Saints. Are there others you can think of that we've done similar things with?
Yes, indeed. In fact, if I just think about the last 12 months, you know, we've had two temple open houses
yes.
in Utah in recent history, and one at Draper and the other one at Oka Mountain Temple. And that always provides an opportunity to invite people. Among those who came recently was a group of very prominent Jews from New York, led by Bob Abrams, who is the former Attorney General in New York, and a real who's who of Jewish leaders from both the secular and religious backgrounds. Some were rabbis and some were not. And it was extremely interesting to see their reaction in going through the temple, for example, with Elder Holland was the tour guide on some of those, and to see his explanation of, for example, the temple baptismal font, and then
yes.
while he has the New Testament, the Old Testament open, and he's reading from Kings and describing precisely the biblical definition of the font in Solomon's temple, and then and they're seeing this. It was just really, I think, very powerful. And I'm sure that those people didn't leave with their theological views changed, but they left really understanding the depth of our commitment. And as I said earlier, the trust, respect, and understanding, I think all of that increased as a result of that. It's interesting, too, as we interact with other Christians, because those same statistics I referred to earlier indicate that about a third of the general public in the United States do not see us as Christian. Why would that be when it's in our name and hopefully it's in the way we live and so on? I think part of that might be because especially with the evangelical community or with part of the evangelical mm-hmm. community, they see that term as not just being followers of Christ. They see that term as being very, very definitive.
Inerrancy of the Bible. And theology.
Exactly. Inerrancy of the Bible, the Trinitarian doctrines. It's very precise for them. And so they have a hard time with it. They probably have less of a hard time when we simply say, look, we follow Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
He's our mentor. He's our model. So, again, it's how we interact with people and how openly we interact with people that overcomes these perceptions of being reserved or secretive or insular. It's very important that members understand that.
You mentioned the Temple Open Houses. We had a wonderful experience as well. We hosted a group. Elder Holland was our tour guide through the Ochre Mountain Temple with a group of evangelical scholars and church leaders. And again, just a sweet experience as he did. Opened those scriptures, read to us from the scriptures, toured them, took their questions, answered them. And then at the end, in a very tender moment, bore his testimony and repeated what he has said on more than one occasion, that for him and for his family, this is what's so significant, that he cannot fathom spending eternity without his wife and without his children. And it was just a glorious setting for them to see us and feel toward us in a very different way.
And that's a good illustration of what we were saying earlier, is that when you talk about being followers of Jesus Christ, it doesn't have to be always in a strictly religious or theological sense. We follow Jesus Christ when we treat our wives and children well, when we introduce love into the family, when we have respect for each other. And so as we embrace those kind of key principles, we demonstrate our Christ-like living. That's the key, I think.
Well, it seems, too, when you consider those statistics you mentioned, a third, that means two-thirds of the population does feel we are Christian, which means they must gauge the definition by some other way than some theological matter, that clearly it's how the people live and the devotion the people seem to manifest toward Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I'm not discouraged for the moment mm-hmm. by the statistics.
But it's something we can work on.
Yeah, I just simply see it as a reality. And the fact is we are making great strides. We have a long way to go. The sooner our members grasp those concepts and the sooner they embrace them and we learn collectively as a people to interact with non-members, the better it'll be.
I agree. And I think it shouldn't be that much of a pain to us if we understand that in many cases what they're saying is, you're not Christian like we are. Well, that's right. Theologically, we're not. Michael, take a bit and summarize for us what you see as the work of public affairs in the church, both institutionally and individually. What would you say?
I'd say our job is to help represent the church accurately to the wider non-member public. Our job is not missionary work. The missionary department and missionaries very mm-hmm. ably take care of that. Our job is to help people see the church for the way it is. And as a convert, I've got to say that's a very, very easy task to embrace. I can see the benefit of that in my own life. And so it's very easy to try to share that with other people.
Yes. Our Savior called us to be the light of the world, the salt of the earth. And it's difficult to make a difference in a world until we're recognized as different in the sense that we can make a contribution. And we're grateful to have had Brother Otterson here with us to discuss improving the church's perception, people's perception of the church, and how people feel about the church, building our own reputation. We're grateful to be able to consider that this is the Lord's work, and because it is, it will prosper, and it will progress, and it will shine. And so we've received our marching orders. We appreciate, Michael, you being with us, and we look forward to having you back again sometime.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Mormon Identity. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you join us next time.